An Irish girl and an English girl walk into a bar. Nothing unusual. Well, except the bar is on a tiny volcanic island, 1,200 miles off the coast of South America, 1,800 miles off the coast of Africa. Nothing in between but ocean. A place where the Union Jack hangs outside, but it's 30 degrees on Christmas Day. A bar where everybody knows your name and the bartender knows your order. This is a podcast of two girls blathering about their favourite things, birds, books, life affairs, trips away and slips, trips and falls in the most remote place in the world. Welcome to another episode of An Irish Girl and an English Girl Walk Into a Bar. It's me, Nicole Shamir, and you?
Anya Hurley. And recently we've been walking into bars all over the world.
We have. We've been globetrotting.
Indeed we have.
During a pandemic.
We're now back on St. Helena. We just arrived in today. I'm currently in my pyjamas eating after eats at Nicole's house where I'm quarantining.
And I'm finishing the bottom of my red wine, which is a habit we got into quite a lot. A lot of red wine and white wine was drunk.
We're true Europeans now. It's not a meal if there isn't a wine.
One of the things that we realised was that, Anya, even though you're an Irish girl, you identify as a Spanish woman.
Yes, yeah. And yeah. I have actually received two lovely compliments during my trip, where on two occasions people said they'd never seen an Irish person with a tan and complimented me on my golden limbs.
You do have very golden limbs. It's absolutely lovely.
I'd like that to be documented in the podcast, because by the time I leave quarantine it may have faded. So if you could just attest, Nicole, that I am quite tan now.
The irony is that when we got in today it was so warm, despite it being St. Helena's winter. And to be fair, winter isn't
it's winter solstice today.
Oh yeah, that's true. Winter is mild as well here anyway. So it's the shortest day of the year over here, if that's winter solstice. That's what it's out, right?
Well, the 21st of June is the summer solstice, and it's in the Northern Hemisphere, and it is the official start of winter in St. Helena. But I don't know whether winter solstice means the light, you know, that it's the shortest day of the year, because the sun sets here so at such a routine time. I don't know enough about that to know.
Anyway, it was warm, and so when we got back to my house, where we're quarantining now for 10 days, we went straight on the loungers with a gin and tonic and carried on tanning, and realised that there may have not been a reason for us to spend all that money and go to the Maldives for a tan, when we could have probably just got it here in garden.
Although we did desperately need, because even though the flight, you know, to be fair, it was great to get the flight, and good that it's so... so direct now, but it is quite a tiring flight, so I must admit I was a bit shattered now when I got here.
Yeah. So the origin of this story of our trip during the pandemic started with, I suppose, a conversation whilst we were walking. Anya, you had not been off the island at that point for, well,
2 years, I believe.
2 years, yeah. It'd been a long time.
Nobody would have noticed it. I didn't seem at all frazzled.
Oh no, you no. weren't uptight and stressed at all, Anya. No. No,
I was my usual calm self.
Yeah, exactly. So whilst discussing about how normally calm you were at that point, we decided, you know, is it possible, to go on holiday during the pandemic? And whilst I was doing a little bit of research for my work as an economist, I was looking through the Wanderlust site, which is a kind of UK-based, I suppose they're a PR company or a media to do with travel and tourism. Lynn from Wanderlust actually came over to St. Helena and gave a nice presentation. So they do know the island well. So
I missed that.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago now.
I would have
inserted
myself into
something. It was actually really good. I went on their website, and they have still a page which talks about if you're a traveller coming from the UK, what you would expect to get when you arrive at certain countries. So some of the countries have quarantines, some require tests and so on. And updated. It is sometimes a little bit of out of date. So I would never use a journalistic article at all to set your proofs about what the entry requirements are. But it's a good start for 10. So
I agree, it's a good starting point, but it definitely should never be used because sometimes they get them wrong. And, you know, obviously, you know, sometimes they get them wrong in that they think it's easier to get into a country than it is. But actually more likely to happen is they think it's more difficult. So in many ways, it's off-putting. So I'd always say go to the government's official website of the country you want to enter.
Exactly. And so that's kind of what we did, you know, once we got into a bit more detail. But so on this site at the time, there were three places. And at this time, I think it was about February, I would probably say we were having this discussion.
So,
maybe January, February or something like that.
It was still very much locked down in most of Europe because at that stage we were thinking we just wouldn't be feasible to try and do anything in the UK or Ireland. So we were really thinking if we could just find somewhere that you could get to.
Yeah, exactly. And flights are going direct from St Helena to the UK. So that was where our starting point was. So at the time, there were three things that stood out to me in particular, partly because there were places that I wanted to go to or had been to before and really liked. And those top three at the time were the Maldives, it was Cambodia, and it was also Armenia. And I think in looking in more detail to Cambodia, I think it was slightly misleading that it looked like you could get in more easily than you could. So that kind of changed at the time. But anyway, now with that head on, what was good at the time is that because a lot of people couldn't travel, it meant that prices were quite low. So we took the opportunity to go to the Maldives and there was like slash prices. I think it was probably about a third
still,
off.
I mean, it was still expensive, but because it's an expensive destination, it was the best time to go because we needed to stay a long time as well because we can only get back to St. Helena when there's a charter flight returning. So we stayed longer in the Maldives than maybe people would often stay, or at least, well, as it happened, we probably did only stay about 2.5 weeks. But when we were planning the trip, it was very uncertain. So it may have been that we would have to spend 3 or 4 weeks there. So it was safer for us to go at a time when prices were reduced, because if we had to spend 4 weeks there, obviously we would have had to get reduced prices to make that affordable. Mm.
So one thing we emphasised many times on this trip was that we are not a couple.
But we are very supportive of same-sex couples.
Exactly. So
because it's very difficult, because you don't want to say that, because, you know, if you keep saying we're not a couple, it looks as if you're homophobic, which obviously we're definitely not. So it's very awkward. But then at the same time, it becomes a bit awkward because when people assume you are a couple, they start asking you things about where do you both live, about your house. You're thinking, well, we both have our own houses because we're not a couple.
And in the, I think what is happening in Ireland and UK, we discussed that we think the marketing for the Maldives was all about honeymoons. Like it's like one-off trip,
weddings,
honeymoons, whatever. And what we noticed when we were there, and maybe this is just pandemic speaking, was...
I don't think so, though, because the facility suited the way it was marketed in other countries.
That's true.
Like, they had kids' clubs and stuff, but you wouldn't have a kids' club if you were only aiming at couples.
Yeah, so particularly, so there was a lot of Russian and German travellers at the time, and I think it was because it was slightly more open to them. And a handful of people from Dubai as well who visited.
True, so they were of various nationalities, but just happened to live in Dubai.
Exactly. And yeah, the Maldives was for all, for groups of friends, for families, particularly for young kids. I mean, the kids' clubs.
But certainly with German and Russian people, it seems to be marketed as a family holiday destination. The way that, like, I don't know, the way a trip to Spain or a trip to the Canary Islands would be marketed as a family-friendly location. So they're not just going for the luxury market for couples. Now, obviously, it's a nice resort and all of that, but it certainly is welcoming to families. But I think that made it a little less awkward for us because we didn't want to be the only friends at a really romantic couples resort.
Yeah, exactly. So we did choose the Maldives, obviously. We went along, we had our flight to the UK, and at the time they were requiring St Helenian arrivals to quarantine, which was bizarre because we haven't had no COVID here in the community and da 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 da. So the way that we had to get around it is by transiting through the UK and not actually spending time in the UK. So it was transit through quarantine, which basically meant we went from Stansted to Heathrow and we got on the plane again.
Yes, that's right. Because that was when we travelled through the UK, it was when it was still an offence for people or residents of the UK to go on a holiday. They could only travel for essential reasons. But that did not apply. It doesn't apply, and it did not apply to people who are not residents of the United Kingdom, or not permanent residents, because even though you are, it's not citizenship, it's residency. So if you're a permanent resident, it applies to you. But I think a lot of people weren't aware of that because it's not something they've, you know, really highlighted. Yeah. So it's at that time, it was perfectly legal for somebody who is not a resident of the UK to transit through. And that meant we just had to, but we did have to leave in 24 hours. So we had to have a flight booked out within 24 hours. So our problem at the time was that we had a weather delay leaving St. Helena. So we had to keep cancelling and rebooking our flight because we had to be out of the UK within that 24-hour period. But it was absolutely fine because when we got to Heathrow, it was deserted. But we had everything ready, all our documentation, but nobody asked us anything really.
Yeah, we had, I mean, the main thing about that was making sure that we'd done the health form for the Maldives. So I think our understanding of it is that airlines are now getting fined or there's some kind of financial penalty if they put someone on the plane and they get to the other side and for whatever reason they're not allowed in.
Yeah, like if somebody had an invalid, you know, their PCR test was out of time or anything of that nature, or they're country was bad, you know, they weren't allowed to get the visa because their country was banned from the country they were trying to get into. So yes, but really they just were focused on us satisfying the requirements for the Maldives, but they didn't really ask us any questions about our resident, whether or not we were residents of the United Kingdom. I think they would have just, you know, but I think that won't be going forward, that shouldn't be an issue for people anyway, because now since then people in England are allowed to travel and that has been relaxed to an extent. So that wouldn't be such a... And St. Helena is now officially on the green list. So that wouldn't be such a problem now.
Yeah, and I think at the time we were a little bit worried because it's confusing, you know, when you're travelling and I've got a British passport and only you've got an Irish passport and you're going through the UK and you're saying, oh, I live in this British overseas territory that no one's ever heard of. It's called St. Helena. Where even is that? You know, it's confusing. And I think... You know, when we talk to people in Dubai, for example, I think they had like similar issues. Mm. You know, if you walk in a UK passport, some people might think, well, you're a resident of the UK. But, you know, I suppose that's one of the pros of being an expat, really, that you live by the rules of your country and not necessarily of the mainland. At least that's the good thing during the pandemic, at least.
Well, I think as well, you have to be very, we realise that you have to be very careful because some countries had that transit route. So some countries, in addition to the UK, some other countries have a similar provision where they allow you to transit through regardless of what restrictions are in place for their own residents. But so I think when we were looking up flights, for example, you could also transit through Germany and you could, I think it was Germany, you could transit through Spain.
Frankfurt,
whereas
yeah.
Some countries don't allow transit, so once you get to that country you have to be subject to their quarantine requirements. So you have to be very careful with the European countries in particular, as they had all taken different approaches, because if you booked a flight that happened to transit through one of the countries that wasn't allowing it, you'd have to stay in that country then and submit yourself to their quarantine regime. So that was something you had to be really cautious about.
And so when we came through, it was 2 or 3 days before the crucial, I think it was the 18th of May where the UK introduced the red, amber and green. And ironically, if we were there 2 days later, St. Helena would have been on the green list and we would have been able to come in and spend longer than 24 hours and spend a few days there if we wanted to without having to quarantine.
We'd just have to do the test, but we wouldn't have to isolate whilst awaiting the test results, which is a big advantage, obviously.
Exactly. But when they introduced the red, amber and green, now this was interesting because Maldives became on the red list. And this
just
is
before we left St. Helena, actually, about 48 hours before we left here. No, I think we found out on the week before, actually, because we found out the Friday before that they had moved from the amber to the red list.
But it didn't change a huge amount for us because most of the flights went through to Dubai and UAE has been on the red list ever since. So. Yeah.
I think every country that had connections to the Maldives was on the red list at that stage, because it's usually UAE, Turkey or Qatar people go through and they were all red listed.
And at the time of travel, and it is still now, at the time we were doing podcasts, which is in late June,
21st of June, winter or summer solstice, depending on your hemisphere.
the thing with the UK, when you were talking about transit, is that if you come in from a red country, you cannot transit through the UK.
No, you have to go into a quarantine hotel, so you
Yeah.
have to pay. I mean, there's a slight question mark over how it would be interpreted, but you definitely have to pay the £2,000. It's rough. I mean, it's not exactly 2,000, but it's roughly £2,000 for a quarantine hotel. So in order to be allowed to enter the UK, you have to pay that money in advance, but you have to be a British or an Irish, or sorry, it's Britain, Ireland, and maybe the Channel Islands. There's a few places in the Common
Yeah.
Travel Agency. So most citizens of most countries
Area,
would actually
yeah.
be rejected and not allowed in at all.
Yeah.
If you're from Britain or the Common Travel Area, you're allowed in once you pay that money. But even if you were transiting, our interpretation and understanding is you'd have to pay the full 2,000, even though you might only be in the hotel for a few hours
Yeah.
between flights. But I think there'd also always be the risk that they might let you out for the flight because there's a lot of, you probably would be able to leave, but there's a lot of confusion. So that would be the biggest risk that you'd
Yeah.
accidentally find yourself in that situation.
So lots of people were telling us you cannot travel to a red list country. However, the reality of it is the UK government does not advise that you travel to a red list country unless in a urgent or essential situation. You can, but you have a couple of options when you get back, and that first is that quarantine hotel, or the second, which is what we did.
And to be fair as well, I mean, we didn't go out looking to go to red list countries because it is
No.
inadvisable. So we went to, we had booked the Maldives when it was amber.
Yeah.
So, and we obviously did live in Santorini where it was a bit different because we could transit through. But I mean, it isn't as if, we didn't go out just to be
Yeah.
difficult and seek out a red list
Who would do
country.
that? Yeah.
But once we had made bookings then and had committed to a holiday, we just had to, work within the rules to
Yeah.
allow that to happen, but obviously be responsible and make sure
Yeah.
that we were safe ourselves and that other people's safety. And of course, we were. Are both double vaccinated, so that
Well,
felt a bit more responsible then.
I've got to say, the irony of the Maldives is that at the time when we travelled, like the cases are huge in Malé, which is the main island. It's like the capital city island, if you like. But the resorts barely have any cases, and when they do, they find out pretty fast, and you're quarantined in your room, and there's social distancing, there's mask wearing during the buffet and all that kind of stuff. But you have to be getting a test on the way in.
And as far as I
It
know, when we
works
were there
brilliantly.
weren't any positive cases in the resorts we were in because we
Yeah.
wouldn't have been allowed, even though we weren't ourselves tested negative. Had there been any positive cases, we wouldn't
Yeah.
have been allowed to move on to the next resort, and we were allowed to move on. So
Yeah.
obviously, it had worked.
Exactly. So they did split stay. So we ended up staying in two resorts. We could have stayed with three or gone to three. The issue that Anya mentioned is having to test between each one just to make sure, which is a really good
Yeah,
measure.
it is good, yeah.
And all the staff there are vaccinated. So
They wear masks at all times, the staff, and gloves in some situations.
yeah. So this was the Maldives tourism. I can't remember their exact name, but they made sure that all of the hospitality staff in the Maldives are all vaccinated. They also have a rule where if you're a staff member and you're coming from Malé, you have to, they quarantine their staff members for 2 weeks.
And the staff can't, I mean, it's obviously it's difficult for the staff, but they can't leave the island only every few, for quite big chunks of
Yeah.
time because obviously every time you leave, you have to go back into quarantine and be retested. So people are not can only take their holidays infrequently so that they can prevent having people having to constantly go in and out of quarantine. And I mean, that is difficult for the staff, but at the same time, I think because the Maldives is so reliant on tourism, certainly the people that work in there that we spoke to were quite pleased that things had opened up and they were able to keep their job and they were sort of willing to make the sacrifice of
Yeah.
staying there a few months at a time because tourism is the industry they work in and it's so important to the Maldives that they felt that sacrifice was worth it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we so on onto the holiday then. So, I mean, so the Maldives holiday, we split that in two. The first area was absolute, oh, so cool. So it was A 15-minute speedboat ride from the airport island. And it was three
Really
resorts.
exhilarating, we actually, because it's just like it's obviously as a speedboat, it's like flying through the waves, the sun is sparkling on the sea, you're out in the open air, like it's really exhilarating. You feel like you're in the
Yeah.
opening sequence of a James Bond film or
And
something.
because you're flying past Malé, you don't go into Malé, and it's basically like a city on an island. It's
Yeah,
mental.
it's just these skyscrapers that seem to emerge from the ocean. It's very unusual, and it looks
Yeah.
like the whole island is just crammed. It's almost you can see the edges, like just crammed in. It's
Yeah,
extraordinary.
absolutely. I mean, they can't have much high waves, otherwise I just feel like the place would be just toppled over. So we stayed in Sai Lagoon, which was a Hilton hotel. Now, where so I was on a Facebook travel forum, and so I was looking at, I wrote a post and says, oh, where's a good resort for people who aren't honeymooning to stay? And someone suggested the Hard Rock Cafe. And so, even though the rooms were booked for that, the Hilton next door was available. And actually, we found out once we got there that all the resorts are linked by a bridge.
Yeah, and you can use the once you stay in one of them, you can use the facilities of the other resort. But as it happened, even though the forum had said that the Hard Rock was the busier resort, it was actually when we got there, the Sai Lagoon resort that we were staying in was actually the livelier we found. So it was really like it was a very modern sort of resort village. Really beautiful, very well maintained. There's lots of like swimming pools. There's obviously those gorgeous white sand beaches. If you go snorkel, like we had amazing when we went snorkeling, for example, we saw all the brightly colored tropical fish, and we saw was it three giant sea turtles?
Oh
Certainly
yeah.
two. I think we saw three actually.
Oh, that was incredible.
Was it? I thought we went snorkeling. Oh, you're right. Yeah, it was because there wasn't much wildlife. But in Sai Lagoon, in the evenings, the tropical fish and the sharks would come out when you crossed. They had a bridge you could cross. When you'd look over the bridge, you'd see all these fish.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah, so you didn't even need to do snorkeling if you want to see them. And they had a Hard Rock Cafe there, which had an amazing house
Oh,
band.
it's such a good band. Like, it's the kind of band you'd actually go and buy tickets for gigs of that band if it wasn't a house band. Like, they were that standard.
And one night they had a karaoke night, which was super fun
That was so good,
as
yeah.
well.
Then we had the we met some other people. One of our last night there, we were chatting to groups of people. Now that was really good, the entertainment there, and very like they also in that resort, which is quite nice, is that because it's this called Marina Crossroads, as well as the resorts, there's some like just independent like businesses and shops and restaurants, and you could go. We didn't have our food included there except for our breakfast, which was amazing.
Oh my God, it was
So.
so good. The South Indian food for breakfast. Oh, like puri and oh my God.
Dosa, it's so good. And then but then in the evening it was quite nice because obviously we really enjoy the restaurants that are on St. Helena, but there aren't that many restaurants here, and you can't, so it was really nice to try different
There was
restaurants.
more restaurants in that place than there was in the whole of St. Helena Island.
That's true. And then they also had kind of like they were ethnic restaurants, so there was
Oh,
different. So it's
Thai
really, yeah,
food,
like there was Thai
incredible.
food. There was a Thai, we went to this Thai Italian fusion, which is like an unusual fusion, and I've never been there before. It was amazing. So they had like Thai flavors and spices on the pizza, and then it was the tables were out on the beach. That was a bit romantic, to be
Oh, it
fair.
was so cute, wasn't
So
it? I
romantic.
was
Like we were there in the moonlight. Yeah, we were in the
like,
moonlight with our like bare feet on the sand, having our cocktails. Yeah.
it was lovely.
Yeah.
I just thought this place was wonderful. And the other thing is that they had a lot that was inclusive, and that became, I think, a big deal after we'd left the resort and realized that it wasn't like that everywhere. So, for example, there's bikes everywhere. So if you can't be bothered to walk, because there is a bit of, it's a bit
Walk
of distance,
involved, yeah.
Exactly. And we didn't get the buggies once, but you just get on the bike and go, no problem. There was a gym there, which was for
It's
when we were
good, yeah.
staying in the Hilton, that was like free to use. And I'm sure Hard Rock had their own version as
I'm
well.
sure.
And there was loads of classes, so we did a aqua fitness class,
I think that
like
was my favorite part, actually, having such access to loads of those classes, because like there was the app we would tend to do aqua aerobics every morning around 11, And then they had hours 11:30. And then during the day, if you wanted to do Zumba class, you know, they had a schedule which they sent you every day. Mm. So you could do a Zumba class, you could do aqua yoga, you could do...
I did this like circus skills.
Oh,
one.
Yeah, you've seen,
I found it really, really difficult. I was going upside down. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to throw up. This is awful.
I did the aqua yoga, which I liked. And then there was things like you could go, we never actually did it, but you could go on a cycle around the island, kind of looking at like the resort. But it was really nice to just be able to do those classes whenever you wanted to have a bit of fitness or whatever. And it kind of gave a bit of structure to your day as well, because it is very much like a relaxed holiday, because especially now with COVID, like you can't leave the island once you get on the island, because if you left, you'd have to do quarantine and tests and everything. So it is nice, you know, it is nice to relax, and it was good to be able to do those classes to just give a bit of structure to the day, I thought.
Yeah. So we were just talking about it before this podcast, and a couple of people have asked, you know, about the Maldives and about it as a wedding destination and also as a destination with young children. Mm. And I've got to say that the Hard Rock Cafe and actually the Hilton, they both had creches for very small children.
They had clubs for the older children. They had activities they could do, because you'd see children going around in these big groups with the people who led the creches, and they would do activities and stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't say like teenager, but primary school age and like infant age and
probably
that kind of thing.
Babies to maybe about 10 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So there's definitely something to do. And I think the parents kind of got away with relaxing whilst their kids were in kids' club.
I mean, I personally think it would be more suited to a holiday for like friends like us, like a group of friends, or else like a family with young children who could avail of those creches. Like, personally, this is just very much... Like, I mean, you can see how it would be romantic. And they do have all these things advertised for couples. Like, you can get these really secluded beach bungalows, and you can book these champagne picnics on the beach and these private bars that would only be open to you. And I mean, I can understand people would probably like that. But personally, I don't like it, because it's very humid. Your hair does get very frizzy. Now, I think a lot of people would be very upset by that if they were getting married and their hair was really frizzy, and because they don't seem to have hair and beauty services there. So maybe with weddings, people fly hairdressers or beauticians into the resort or something, but they're not widely available. Like, you don't see hairdressers or beauticians on the resort. And personally, if I was either getting married or even a guest at a wedding, I wouldn't be very pleased if my hair looked awful in every photo.
Yeah, I also didn't find it a place that I would like to go on honeymoon, because I think I would, I don't know, not get bored, but like...
Well, I don't think it's romantic personally, but maybe that's just me.
So, I mean, we'll explain it in a bit, but later on we went to Seville.
Oh, it's much better.
And we were like, this.
Much more romantic.
This for our honeymoon. Yeah.
Like, I think the Maldives is more for like a relaxing family holiday or friends or something. And I think it's ideal in a situation like we were in, where, you know, I hadn't been away for a long time. Travel is difficult with COVID, where you just want to relax and have a change of scene.
And have cocktails.
So it's ideal if you just want to really chill out, you know, and just take a break. I think it's ideal. Whereas personally, it wouldn't be a honeymoon or wedding destination for me.
So the,
I mean, I love the way I say that, and everyone's probably thinking, obviously,
when are you getting back?
Because, you know, clearly I do need to plan out my wedding and honeymoon destination.
So for all of you very tall men out there who are looking to wed Anya for...
No, normal height, Nicole. You just think they're very tall. It's just people of a normal height.
6 foot and over or something.
So
like
people
that.
Are taller than me in heels. Is it actually just a normal height?
No, you're very tall, Anya.
Oh, I'd say I'm average height, but whatever.
Yeah, you're freakishly tall. Anyway, where were we? Yeah,
just
Seville's
my
answer, though.
Single, basically, just announced to our listeners in case anyone is worried.
Well, they wanted to ask when you were on a date. Okay, so the second resort we went to in Maldives, because we felt it would be a shame to go all that way and just see one place. So we wanted to go on a seaplane.
Yeah, and that was amazing. We did.
That was amazing.
It was so exhilarating.
That was so good.
Like, you get that proper like flip in your stomach, like you get the first time you're on a normal plane.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my god.
I can still hear the propeller. That
was so good. Yeah.
It's so good.
Like, you feel like you're a fighter pilot, an explorer, a tourist, all wrapped up to one.
Because you're shoved into, like, this metal tube with, like, loads of other travellers who are, like right by your knees.
Oh, my God. You've got, and, like, the luggage that is basically some man at the back does just have the luggage piled at his knee, as far as I can see.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, just chucked in.
Everywhere. You wouldn't want to be too big on these planes now. Like, you don't have much room.
Yeah. And then the two pilots at the front, like, the doors open and you basically, like, could have to chat to them if you wanted to.
One of them was flying barefoot.
Oh, yeah. He was extremely attractive.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Married. Anyway. Yeah. So that was so cool. And you also got to see all the colours that you can, you know, imagine. I'm sure people have seen the videos of this. It's just amazing.
Gorgeous.
Where, like, the kind of bluey greens of the sun hitting the sea, which has got the sand just below it. And it's just absolutely blooming stunning.
Absolutely gorgeous.
So we chose to go to Corredo Island, which is a bit... I suppose it's a bit of an old-fashioned one, I suppose you can say. Corredo was old-fashioned in, like, the nicest possible way, in the sense that it had been a resort that had been functional for probably decades, I would say. And we had one of the older bungalows, I think it was, because we went for the cheapest. I mean, we're not going to spend loads of money because we're not a couple. And the room was, like, fine. You could definitely go, like, more upmarket than we did. And it was a much more natural island. So it was one of the biggest islands in the grouping. So you had, you know, real palm trees. You had lots of foliage in the middle. Lots of people sweeping leaves throughout the day, bless them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was very... Having more nature and the fact that there was these, like... natural groves of trees. I mean, you cycled along, there was lots of, like, foliage on either side, and these, like, quite natural groves that you cycled through. That was really beautiful. That was really nice. It was a sand everywhere resort, which is why the people were sweeping the leaves. I mean, it was a nice idea,
weird.
But so impractical. So even in every single indoor restaurant, it was sand.
Yeah,
like,
so
really deep, 4 or 5 inches of sand on the ground, even indoors. And then the first few days there, we had a good bit of rain because we got the tail end of that. Well, not the tail end, sort of the side of the cyclone that was battering India at the time, because India had a dreadful cyclone in India. And we were very lucky in that we only got very much the side of it and just some, but it was torrential rain and some wind. And then that passed away, and obviously we had some very nice weather again. But yeah, it was much better for snorkeling, though, as we said, because it was more
three
natural.
Turtles,
That was where we saw three giant sea turtles and lots of brightly coloured tropical fish. And then it was also from there that we were able to go to another island and go to the underwater restaurant, which was amazing.
It was like, it was one of the best thing, like possibly one of the best restaurants I've ever been to.
I would agree, yeah, definitely. Like, because even if they never had a gimmick like being underwater, if it was just a normal restaurant, the food would have been amazing, even by any standard. But the fact that it was underwater, and as you're eating, all these tropical fish are swimming up to the window.
What was it? Was it called Hirawali or something like that, the name of the...
Yes, it was. It was, I don't know how
and
to
it was
pronounce
like,
it. It was like Hawali or something.
Yeah, and the restaurant was something like something below. It was like the amount of meters.
It was 84 or something. I don't know if I'm right. It was the amount of feet that it's below sea level.
Something like that, yeah. So it was quite quiet because, again, back to the fact that a lot of people
can't travel
during the pandemic. So there was...
We went at lunch, which apparently is a bit quieter than dinner.
Yeah. And there was one other set of two.
Yeah.
Also known as a couple who were there. And... we basically bought both the food and also the wine pairing, which was well worth it.
Oh, completely.
I mean,
we're
talking bucks. This was really expensive. Like, it was blown up, like, hundreds, right? Mm. This was expensive. Mm. So I'm not even saying, pretending that that's the kind of
cheap, no.
That's the kind of meal that we always have. Like, we don't. But we really decided to splash out because we'd seen the reviews on TripAdvisor and it was just like... one in a lifetime experience, amazing. And you know, we were so close, and oh my god,
well, you're not
going to
fly back there, are we? I mean, like, as you're there, it's obvious, you know, it's not like you're going to fly back in a few years' time and pay thousands to go to something that you regret not seeing the first time.
And we had this fantastic sommelier who was only working on our table.
It was amazing. Because, I mean, you would have had to pay. The thing is, I'm sure there are restaurants who do that. They give you a sommelier just for your own table, and they probably charge you thousands of pounds to have this person's one-to-one undivided attention. But we just got that because, basically, of COVID, because of the lack of tourists there. I'm sure usually that restaurant is full to capacity and he has to divide his time, of course, between all of the tables. But we got this amazing one-to-one where he would like give us a really detailed discussion about each wine, answer any questions, would explain why he chose that wine to go with this particular food. But it was absolutely gorgeous wines. I mean, I think we did take pictures of some of the labels and hope we'll see them in the future. But I mean, I imagine they're all very expensive as well. But it was really, really nice.
Or visit the vineyards,
yeah,
maybe.
True,
that's probably
more. That's true, actually. But it was wines that we, like a lot of them we'd never heard of, but delicious and very well paired.
Yeah. And in fact, he changed one of the pairings because whilst he was talking to us, he realised that, you know, you and I have really different tastes. We're almost like the opposite in some ways. Yeah. So you kind of go for quite like citric kind of white wines and I prefer like oaky red wines. But then once we had more conversations about like what wine we tend to drink in restaurants and blah, 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 he then would be like, oh, you would like, you personally
would
like this thing. And then he even he even changed one of the wine pairings because he was like, I think you're going to like this better.
And it was gorgeous.
Yeah, was that a Riesling or something like that?
He said you'd like this Riesling and I don't like Riesling because it's sweet. And I was kind of thinking, oh, this, I won't like this. But he'd actually picked a really dry Riesling, which was not sweet. Yeah. And it was amazing.
It was just unbelievable. And the fish, like, you know, we joke that I spent, you know,
because we both got different meals as well, which is good because I got the seafood menu and you got one. You had a little bit of seafood but you also had meat and stuff, so you had like a kind of a mixture.
And they've got like a really high-end vegetarian one as well, which is cool.
We thought we'd get our value for money though and get the seafood and the meat.
Exactly, just to mix it up. But yeah, and they give you this little menu card, which is for the fish that are swimming in the sea, so that you can pick out and say like, oh, this fish and that fish and da da da. And honestly, like I've done a lot of scuba diving, and this was even cooler than even being underwater with all your kit because they had created a bunch of reefs around the restaurant. Mm. So there were just these huge amount of shoals of fish.
I wouldn't see the point of me learning how to dive now because I think what I'm going to do is just go to underwater restaurants around the world, so that'll be my thing now.
So you mentioned there was other ones around the world, and there was one in Norway he talked about, wasn't it?
He said there's one in Norway that's meant to be good, but they don't get as much marine life because of the colder water, like you just wouldn't.
Yeah.
And then I think he said there might be one other one in the Maldives as well on a different island.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
And there was somewhere...
Maybe was it like... It was somewhere quite unusual, the other one. I can't think now.
But I think he was saying that that one has probably the most percentage of it being glass or something like that.
The one that we were in had the most percentage of glass and I think maybe had the most marine life around it or something. Mm. Yeah. But it was really good because it was an expensive thing to do. And sometimes when you go on holidays, you do something and you spend money and it's a letdown, it's a bit of a gimmick, it's disappointing. But this was one of those things where it was worth it. It was worth every penny because it was genuinely a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And it was so well done that you felt you did actually get value for money.
Yeah, and it was just, it was incredible. We had a little interlude to get tea and after-eights. Yeah, like, after-eights, mate.
I love them.
Like, softly, like, taken, you know, cold from the fridge.
It's just the fact that they're in. I like the fact that they're individually packaged. It just seems
they're so classy.
Luxurious or something. Mm. Yeah.
Delicious, not nutritious. Anyway, where were we on our little story?
Oh, we were talking. We spoke about the underwater restaurant, and we were saying how we really enjoyed that. And then,
so part of our Maldives trip got slightly sidetracked because of the whole it being in a red list thing, and we needed to get back to the UK eventually.
Via Europe, as I am a European woman, just to be clear.
Yeah. to get back to St. Helena. So we weren't interested. We could have done the hotel quarantine, but we weren't interested in doing that and we had time. So we spent several days doing research on countries that we could get into that were not red listed from the borders.
But that allowed people from red listed who had been in a red list country to enter.
Mm. So, on an ideal world, before all this happened, we would have loved to spend a few days in Dubai.
Mm.
But Dubai was also red listed, so we had the same problem.
We couldn't waste the time because there was no point. Our clock wouldn't start ticking if we'd been out of a red list country.
We also noticed that the red, amber, and green were very political. And
well, that's our opinion.
Our opinion, what we thought. And it seemed more likely that the UK would choose a European country to be in, say, the amber and potentially in the green. And with the green, there was a bit of obvious favouritism, I think, rightly, with the British Overseas Territories being in the green.
Well, then, to be fair, they do have no incidents. Like, you couldn't just... couldn't do a green list and not include St Helena. That would be ridiculous, considering the no incidents.
And like you said, well, there is also no coincidence of that, because the UK, very early on, sent a load of vaccines off to its British Overseas Territories. So the majority of BOTs have been, like, adult population have almost, like, all been vaccinated. So,
but then Dubai is very high vaccination list.
It does now, yeah.
And the UAE's been on the list. But that's because they're a transport hub, so you can sort of understand that.
Yeah. So there's, you know, I think after looking at a lot of countries, these are the kind of, like, assumptions that we came to, I guess.
Well, I think it depends as well, because there's so many... Whether or not you decide a country should be red, amber, or green, it's completely... Excuse me, I'm struggling with an aspiration. It completely depends on the criteria which you use to assess. So if the criteria was tweaked even slightly, you could have a completely different list of red, amber, green. Because it depends. So, for example, if you gave more weight to vaccines, you could have different countries on the list, because some countries are doing really well with their vaccines, but they might have slightly higher rates still of community transmission. So it really just depends on the criteria you use and the day you apply it.
Exactly. So let's talk about some of the countries that we looked at. One was Cyprus, being that part of it had an element which was a British overseas territory, and I can never pronounce the name, which is really embarrassing, but it begins with A and there's a D.
Like a Curie or something.
There
like
you go. And
I'm not counting the second part.
Yeah. So that sounded pretty cool. We might have had contact somehow to find friends of friends who might be visiting there, maybe through the Met Office or something. So we could have been like, you know, it's look cool. Now, there's two issues with Cyprus.
But we would have had to just go, we wouldn't have been going to the military base, so we would have gone to the normal base of Cyprus. But the thing is, it would have been hot, but Cyprus's rates were skyrocketing.
That was the thing. The rates were going up and up. And the second thing is, they were allowing people who have been vaccinated in with no quarantine. However, they had a list of countries that they accepted vaccination from, and St Helena was not on it. UK was. So if you're coming from the UK, that's absolutely fine.
And then we think after, I think as well, it might have been, it was very difficult to interpret whether they meant, whether they cared whether you had been vaccinated or whether they meant where you were travelling from. So do you see what I mean? It was very difficult to interpret whether they would accept somebody who was vaccinated in St Helena, but then travelling to Cyprus from the UK, or whether you actually had to have the vaccine administered in the UK. It was really unclear what they meant by that.
So we had to literally get into the depth of, like, law, government website, all that kind of stuff to find out. We ended up sending an email to find out more, and you know, it came back that basically it was difficult for us. So we moved on from the Cyprus idea. We had other countries in mind. Jordan was another one you looked into, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jordan would have been a possibility in that they were in the amber list. They were allowing vaccinated people in, and once you had a negative PCR and had been vaccinated, you didn't have to quarantine on arrival. You know, it was quite good. I've always wanted to go to Jordan. The only problem was that because Jordan is also a bit of a transport hub, and I think is probably now more of a transport hub because the rest of the Middle East is all red list. We were a bit worried that Jordan might be likely to might get red listed while we were there, so we thought that would be a bit of a gamble to take. But I mean, I have to say, Jordan has been on my holiday list for a while. Yeah. And I know the last time I was booking holidays before COVID with friends, it was something we looked into. And I'm definitely love to go back there to see all the, you know, the Petra site and the Dead Sea and everything. So definitely, but just not this time. It wasn't the right choice.
Yeah. And so for that general reason, we kind of moved away from the Middle Eastern ideas. I mean, Armenia was another one we looked into again, which looks absolutely beautiful.
The rates were quite high. Romania was going to allow travel, but it wasn't allowing it when we were looking. I think it was going to be a week or two later that they would take the essential ban away. I think Slovenia were letting people in, but again, their rates were maybe becoming a bit high, we thought. Montenegro was letting people in.
That was a high choice for us.
Yeah.
I think the only thing is we didn't personally know a lot about the country itself. So, I think that was, like you
said.
And
also getting to some of these countries is very difficult for us because once our flight from Dubai with Emirates was actually cancelled, so then we realised that getting from the Maldives to some of the countries we were considering was actually going to be a bit of a difficulty. Yeah.
We found out we can transit, as you mentioned earlier, Anya, we could transit through Germany, at the time. And I think it has changed.
I mean, it could
now
change and people would have to check the rules themselves regularly. Yeah. We don't.
And at the time, Portugal was greenlisted by the UK. And one of the interesting rules about Portugal when we went into depth is that they were banning flights from certain countries.
But not the people
who had been in the certain countries. So if you look at the rules, so for example, there is no route between, I don't know, many of the Asian countries and Portugal. But it wasn't explicit.
Sorry to interrupt, Nicole. I'm just moving the after rates away from my...
I'm just going to have one more and then I'm going to put it in the fridge.
I love it.
Because there's too many... Yeah, we've eaten a lot. That was really nice, though. So Portugal, you could get to pretty much from all over Europe because they were allowing flights. But it wasn't... It seemed that you could travel, say, from the Maldives, say, via Germany at the time,
Frankfurt,
and then get into, I think it was Lisbon.
Yeah.
But the issue was that, like we said before, the airlines were the ones who were doing a lot of the policing of this. Mm-hmm. And because it wasn't entirely clear on the website, it was just a bit of a risk for us.
And a lot of the issues as well were that because most countries update their rules every few weeks, and particularly in May and June, because countries were trying to encourage some level of tourism, there were a lot of countries who were due to do updates around the time we were traveling, like late May. A lot of countries were due to update their rules, but sometimes it seemed to take a while for that to filter through to the airlines. So like if a country, for example, updated their list on the 15th of May, the airline might continue to implement the stricter rules until maybe the 20th of May. So we would often see that even though if you looked at a country's government website, a rule had relaxed, the airlines and the tourist websites would keep to the old rule.
Yeah.
And then we were a bit worried that an airline would just refuse us, because if there was uncertainty, rather than take the risk of paying a fine, they might just turn us away.
And this is why we ended up booking about 3 days before we left the Maldives. And obviously we did have a return flight, but that got cancelled on us.
We're hoping to get a refund though in due course, hopefully.
Yeah.
But we'd only be getting a refund on half of it anyway, because we used half the ticket. So I'd say hopefully we will.
So the long and short of it is our beautiful entry point that we decided top of the list, not the only one out there, but really winning awards, was Spain.
Well, I mean, you know, it's traditional, isn't it? We're all off to sunny Spain for a holiday.
Exactly. So Spain were very pragmatic. I personally like the rules in Spain, not just because of the entry of it, in that because we were from what they called a high-risk country, we needed to make sure that we had a PCR test before entry. So that was very pragmatic. Of course, we got that and we were negative and we came in fine. But also their rules... in and around Spain were very good. Like, I had never seen anywhere where mask wearing was so diligently done.
I agree. If people in Spain were really, really applying the rules, adhering to the rules, and even though they had this 12 midnight curfew, now, I understand by Spanish standards, that is, of course, very early, because Spanish people go out so late in the normal times, stay out so late. But having said that, I mean, you can have a very pleasant, like 12, being allowed to stay in a bar and restaurant until 12 is absolutely fine when you're on holidays. Like, that's very pleasant. Yeah. You can't complain about that, really.
And I think we said before about Seville being like the ultimate like destination for a honeymoon, because there was just so much to do. I absolutely love it. I mean, we've both been there before. And Alcazar, the gardens there were absolutely stunning.
The streets, just the normal streets. Like, they have so many of the old cobble streets with beautiful buildings, like absolutely gorgeous architecture. The like amazing cafe culture, like many squares. You can't turn around without finding an amazing bar with like tapas, wine, cocktails.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
just
so
a
safe
buzz,
as
like,
well.
Just a really nice buzz around the
city. Yeah. It was a buzz, but it was like socially distanced. You know, they all did the QR code system, which is something that the UK is doing loads. So, you know, you don't
get a paper menu.
Yeah, you look it up on your mobile and then
they have sanitizer on the tables. They have, they all wear masks. Then you only take off your mask whilst you're drinking, then you put it back on.
Yeah.
And then even just, you know, in the queues and stuff, they social distance, like they've marked out where you should stand to go into different attractions. And I mean, the reality of it is that because it is quieter, tourist attractions are actually more pleasant to visit because they're more manageable crowds. In the same way, if you go to a pool or something, you can get a lounger because there's only half the usual amount of people probably there.
Definitely. And we needed to do a bit of shopping, or needed. Needed isn't really the word, but you know, when you've not been out of St Helena for 2 years.
Because
I mean, there's
difficult to digest, you know, need and unwind.
Well, yeah. And the shopping there is just really good.
I really like
St Helena, because obviously we need summer gear, right? So
yeah,
exactly. So for St Helena, it was absolutely ideal for us.
With lighter clothes.
Yeah.
And very stylish in Seville. I've always thought Seville is a very stylish city.
Both men and women looked absolutely amazing. Like, it is a dry heat there, so none of this frizzy that you were talking about with the Maldives.
Everyone gets their hair blow dry. They have loads of salons. We got our hair we got a deep conditioning treatment to our hair, because as you said, of the dry heat, if you get your hair styled, it sticks. Like, it doesn't frizz. It stays for the day.
Yeah.
So most of the women go around with these amazing blow dries.
So by this time we were living the life, like we had tans, we had nice hair that didn't frizz, we had great outfits, and it was just wonderful. And we discovered this one of the rooftop bars. I mean, I think there's a few in many of the hotels and restaurant there, and this particular one was looking over the cathedral, and we spent, you know, a while there, and it was just so classy.
It was beautiful, and it was really, like, the bar was obviously just amongst the rooftops. It was amazing. But no, I love Seville. I'd highly recommend Seville as a city to visit. It's gorgeous and great energy. But then luckily for us, we were in Seville because we had access to both Portugal and Gibraltar, because we had chosen Seville because at the time both Portugal and Gibraltar were on the green list. So we had initially thought we would go to Portugal from Seville, because you were allowed to travel from Spain into Portugal over the land border by coach.
Yeah.
And then we had actually made bookings in Portugal. We planned to spend a few days on the coast in the Algarve and then go to Lisbon and then
we
go
look
to visit
Lagos.
Your father in the mountain area. But then unfortunately, the morning we arrived in Seville, reports, kind of first of all, sort of rumours started circling in the media that the green list was going to be changed and Portugal was going to be removed from it. And then I got a message from my friend Veronica saying that she had seen like an actual news report, reputable news report, and had I seen it. So then we started like digging online, and we saw that even though the announcement hadn't officially been made, like all of the newspapers, the reputable papers, were calling it. So then we had to decide what we would do. But luckily, we were close to Gibraltar, and Gibraltar had remained greenlisted, so we were able to then make arrangements. Now, luckily, we again had all of our bookings on booking.com were free cancellation for Portugal, so we didn't lose money on our accommodation.
Yeah, booking.com, I just got to do a plug here, because, I mean,
so good. Yeah.
So good. I mean, they're not all, like, cancelled the day before, you know, they all have different things.
Like, you do have to be careful of that again, because sometimes it's 24, sometimes it's 48, you have to be watchful of that.
But accommodation was never a problem. The only thing that cost us money was
flights.
PCR test. Yeah, exactly, and the PCR test.
But no, booking.com was great because you could cancel without any hassle,
yeah,
you know, when you needed to. And yeah, so we then very quickly had to decide whether we would go back to England and do the quarantine, like go back immediately and do the quarantine in the hotel, or whether we would stay in Spain and then go back but have to do the Amber quarantine. So we'd have had to go back, either go back ages before the flight to St. Helena, or else just transit through, like cut out having any time in the UK and just do the transit again. But in the end, we decided that Gibraltar was the best compromise because it meant we could continue on having a, like a holiday in a nice, in a sunny place and see a new place. But also, because it was in the green list, we then could spend a few, once we spent 10 days in Gibraltar, we could actually spend a few days in England on the way back, which we wanted to do to catch up with various people.
I would have never put myself in Gibraltar until we went. And it's not, it was just, for me, it was amazing.
I really liked it because we, yeah, I agree. Like, we went there completely by circumstance because of what happened with the countries. I would never have chosen to go on holidays to Gibraltar. It just wouldn't have occurred to me to go there. And some people said it was quite small and stuff, you know, so it was difficult to know whether I would like it. But it just didn't occur to me to go there really ever. But I was so pleasantly surprised. Like, I really, really enjoyed it there. And I had actually liked it so much I would go back.
Yeah, so they, you know, they have the majority of adults being vaccinated. They, the case rates when we were there, it was about 2 per day, but they were picking them up because of the testing. So they don't really do quarantine as much. There's a table, so it depends where you come from, and it depends if you're vaccinated or not. So our case, we've been vaccinated, but we had been in a red, and so they required us to do tests on day
day five.
Yeah.
But we didn't have to isolate in between the tests. So as long as the first test was negative, you didn't have to isolate. So you could go about your business, which was great. Now, if we had not been vaccinated, it would have been different. We would have had to do some isolation there, but luckily, because we were vaccinated, that wasn't an issue for us.
So we came in on the land border. We were taking the coach.
That was a really nice coach trip, actually, because you go all along the coast, and then you can see Morocco. You see I can never pronounce it. It's Algeciras, I think. I don't know if it's Algeciras or Algeciras, but it's the main port between in Spain that looks over to Morocco, where you get the ferry to Tangier. And then they had, you know, you can see that. You can see Morocco. You can see Gibraltar coming into you. It's a really scenic coach trip.
Lovely. Yeah. And then when you get to La Linea on the Spanish side, and we just got a little taxi that took us to literally the land border, and we walked across, and I got my passport stamped, being a British passport, and you being European didn't need to.
Well, obviously, as a, you know, as a European who identifies as a Spanish woman, they stamped my passport.
They
didn't even open my passport, actually. They just looked at it. This was the Spanish side.
And then on the British side, you know, we had to show it. And
through the glass,
And, you know, it was a bit like, well, there you go. I mean, they have people crossing the border every day all the time for work. So they have to make it easy. I mean, I laugh now because we just went through immigration today in St. Helena, and yeah, I mean, it's a different thing, but like the time it takes versus the time there, it's super quick there, basically.
But I suppose that's because they don't, they just have, because they have so many people crossing, they just have to take a different approach, that it's more about getting crowds through.
So, Gibraltar was hot and sunny. They had a load of good shops.
Really nice shops, actually. And it's duty-free. The shopping is duty-free.
And VAT-free, and then they had some, like, little British favourites, like M&S, I saw there.
I think M&S was the main kind of known one. There was a small Next, but it was only for men and children. It wasn't the
one.
And then
there's some decent, like, department stores as well, didn't they, with some of the brand stuff in there. So, and you would see things like Mango out there.
Zara. They had Monsoon shop. They had, then they have loads of, like, perfume and jewellery shops because of duty-free shopping. And then they have obviously like really nice independent shops as well, like some Spanish, you know, maybe, I don't know, the Spanish or Gibraltarian people that have independent shops. And but it's very, I do think it particularly appealed to us. Like, if you were living in England and you had a huge Marks & Spencer's in your local area, you're not going to be excited that there's a tiny Marks & Spencer's to go on holidays. But because we live in St. Helena and we don't have access to clothes shops or those type of department stores, obviously that's good for us to be able to go and do that. And then also...
Definitely. I think for British expats who don't live in the UK...
Yeah, it's ideal.
And yeah, then it's like absolutely perfect. You know, I've got
like
friends all
across
the world. Like
any of those people from Dubai that we met, they would have loved it as well. Or, you know, I agree.
Exactly. Friends of mine, you know, Australia, China or whatever. Yeah. It would actually... Because it's like, it's bits of UK, but also hot. And also, you get loads of little bits of culture. So we went to a brilliant Moroccan restaurant there,
Of
course.
Yeah, amazing, loads of Spanish tapas restaurants, of course.
Yeah, lots of Spanish people.
Spanish is spoken just as much as English. They speak both languages, really. Yeah, kind of a mixture of the two sometimes.
Some really good, like, wine bars as well. Really classy.
Yeah, I mean, the prices are probably about... It wouldn't be as cheap as mainland Spain. Like, it's probably the same as... Probably the prices in England, I would say.
I'd say cheaper, actually.
Maybe a little bit cheaper. Well, it would be cheaper, like, than London or the bigger cities, but it would probably be the same as the regional places, I'd say. And then it's like... But some of the things, again, with the restaurants, there are loads of independent restaurants, like, as we said, that Morocco, you know, there's loads of them. There's also a few of the chain restaurants, which, again, we quite liked because...
Like
we
Pizza Express.
So, again, you know, if you lived in England all year round, you probably don't want to go to Wagamama or Pizza Express when you go on your holidays. But if you're in that situation where you know, a lot of people in St. Helena, either saints or expats who would like those restaurants, don't have access to them, you quite would like that. Yeah. So I think a lot of people who live in St. Helena, whether they're saints or expats, would really enjoy that.
Yeah, so they obviously use the British pound. It's easy. They speak English as well. There was two hotels that we stayed in. One was called the Elliot, which was a Irish.
It's an Irish hotel.
It's
kind of like, I would say it's a business person's hotel. Like, you see, because when we got there, because of the change of the Portugal off the green list, Gibraltar was like inundated with tourists.
So we didn't really have
the choice of hotels you would usually have, because we basically had to take what was available, not, you know, be able to shop around. So we went to, I would say the Elliot Hotel, like, I liked it. I thought it was a nice hotel. They had a nice pool and that, but I think it is more of a commercial hotel. Like, it would be more if you were there on business. It wouldn't necessarily be a tourist hotel, and it's not really that lively for tourists. But it is a good location.
I did ask about the music, because that was one thing in the Maldives, the Hard Rock and Hilton. Like, it had music all the way around.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic, because you were just chilling by the pool, and you had some, like, chilled Ibiza beats type thing going on. And Elliot didn't have that, but I did ask about it, and they said they will be installing a sound system and be able to do that, but it's going to take a few months. Mm. So,
and I think as well, they were just all a bit taken aback by this sudden influx of tourists, really. Mm. Then we went to this yacht hotel called Sunborn, which is really unusual. It's like they call it a yacht, but it's more like a cruise ship, really. It's not like a yacht, I would say. You'd really call a yacht. So it's like a cruise ship, basically, that's permanently moored there and is a hotel.
Yeah.
And I mean, I liked it. Their sun terrace was very lively. They had
good music,
they had good loungers. There was another place where you could sit in deck chairs. Yeah, very nice cocktails. Now, it was a little bit flashy. Some of the people were
very
there.
Flashy.
There was a bit of a show off element, which I wouldn't.
There was
a big
crowd that. Basically, I kind of overheard a lot of people saying that they were going to go on holiday to Marbella, but then blah, 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 Amberlist, blah, blah, blah. So they went to Gibraltar instead. So I have also never seen so much plastic surgery and fillers in one place.
Yeah, a lot of
them.
Well, I did also see it, though, in the Maldives with the Russian ladies.
So, oh, that's true. Yeah.
But
true.
It was a very Taui vibe.
Yeah, it was. And the room was kind of hilarious because, like, it was really nice, but we've got a problem with cold because we're used to hot climes.
And we don't like air conditioning.
No. So anyway, it was like, the air conditioning doesn't work when you open your door. So we were like, okay, let's just like, get that door open. And then we put it on so it would be so hot. So we were like, oh, 26 degrees. And yeah, it was still blowing out cold air. And even when we put off, it was still blowing out. So yeah, but the funniest thing about that bedroom was the bathroom.
Oh my goodness.
Being that we are not a couple. The bathroom had no door.
But then we've had a few unusual bathrooms, because in Corredo, they were trying to make like their outdoor bathroom romantic. It was just like if somebody 50 years ago had an outdoor toilet because they couldn't afford an indoor toilet. That's what it was. But they were trying to make this romantic feature. And I was thinking, you're like, I'm paying to be going to an outdoor toilet. Like, this is a bit much.
And also, when the cyclone was happening,
like, oh,
and the toilet paper was getting wet, and it was just like being soaked, and you were like, oh.
I'll just go out to the outdoor toilet and have a cyclone.
Yeah, exactly. No, that was funny.
But in Sunborn, I don't even know how you would describe this bathroom. It was bizarre.
It was like, I suppose, a walk-in bathroom, and then they did have cubicles. One was for the shower, one was from the toilet.
It wasn't a different room. Usually the ensuite is a separate room, so it's like a proper room with four walls. You open the door, you go into it, you close the door. But this was like the sink area, and you know where you'd wash your hands and where the towels were hanging up and everything, was only separated from the bedroom by like a wardrobe. It was the other side of a wardrobe.
And it was a glass wardrobe, which had like a brown tinted glass on it, which was slightly reflective. So you may or may not be able to see someone through it, depending on whether both sides of the doors were closed. But yeah, and then you had...
The toilet was in a cubicle, then a self-contained cubicle.
Which was a clear glass with a couple of like lines across it. So it was a bit like, right, when you're in the bathroom, I will not go in the bathroom. And it was just...
Even when you came out of the shower, because you weren't walking into... usually you get out of the shower, you step into a bathroom which has a closed door. But because you stepped into this odd room, which is essentially part of the bedroom and open to the bedroom, we'd have to sort of, like, if you were using the bathroom, I'd have to very much stay in the other part of the bedroom, kind of look in the opposite direction, and you'd have to do the same when I was using the bathroom.
So we mentioned before that there wasn't many places left. So this was, I think this was for a room, it was like 500 quid a night or something. And it was just so funny. And maybe there are other rooms. I mean, I don't know.
These bathrooms, because when I went to Mauritius before, I had an even worse bathroom. So I think in some of these resorts, it's some idiot who must be designing all these resorts, seems to think that it would somehow be romantic to have, like, it's, you know, because these places tend to focus mainly on couples and people having like romantic breaks. It would be it would be horrible for any couple.
Not being funny, but people have to go to the toilet, right? Yeah. And if you've got these open bathrooms, right, you're having a romantic thing with your partner, and then they go, and you've had a curry the night before, they go into the toilet, and then there's a smell that comes out, and you're just like, well, that's the romance dead there. Like, what are these people thinking?
I know, but it was even worse in the bathroom, because when I went to Mauritius, I was luckily in this room by myself, so it didn't matter at all, but that bathroom was even worse than the one we had in Sunborn, because it literally didn't have the cubicle around the toilet and the shower. So it was just this partition made of straw between the bedroom and the bathroom.
Oh my gosh.
Like, not straw, but, you know, like wicker furniture. Mm. Like, kind of. But I don't know why they do this. It's very odd.
This kind of brings me back to travelling in India with my friend. And it was definitely not a style factor, but there was a couple of rooms that we stayed in where there was these very thin partition walls between the toilet and the room. And because we were sick, like, the entire time, we got, you know, Delhi belly or whatever it was. We called it the lurch. So basically, your stomach would go. And by the way, like, I followed all the rules, you know, had bottled water, made sure I didn't eat salads, made sure I didn't eat meat because it could have been hung out and left and all that kind of. You follow all the rules, right? But still, you get this thing and your stomach goes lurch. And you know you've got approximately somewhere between 2 minutes and 10 minutes to get to the bathroom before basically just all hell breaks loose. So anyway, so imagine you and your friend in this situation, in this like tiny partition room. Anyway, we knew each other very intimately at this point. But no one wants that on a romantic trip.
My advice to anybody after this trip who is going off to get married or go on a honeymoon would be inquire about the bathroom and make sure that the room has a normal 4 concrete walls standalone bathroom. That would be my advice to any honeymooners.
I completely agree. And anyone who comes from a hot country, just make sure you go to a room with a fan and not an air conditioning unit.
And that you can control and turn off the air conditioning yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Not that we're being picky, of course.
No.
Exactly. And if you go to the Maldives, make sure your bicycles are free, because it's really annoying when they're not. So we did a bit of hiking around Gibraltar. It's not just about shopping.
No.
In some ways, we walked to a couple of beaches, so Catalan Bay.
Yeah.
We didn't quite get to Sandy Bay. On a driving tour. And we also did quite a cool hike to the top of the rock.
That was a really enjoyable hike, actually. Yeah. Because we took the trail called again? I did take a picture. I'll just consult it.
Yeah, have a look at that.
The description.
So we walked up the roadway to one of the, let's say, forts. And then carried on up, and we got to these steps where the kind of monkeys are at. And the issue was that we could have got right to the top of the steps, so I think it was called the Skyline or whatever, it was Skybridge or something like that. We could have got to the top of the steps and completed our ascent, but there was two monkeys in the way, and it was probably about 10 steps from the top.
Well, they had signs up saying that they'd become aggressive if cornered on the steps, so we couldn't risk it.
Exactly.
And then if they were to bite you or something, you'd have to worry about rabies. It would be a big ordeal.
Yeah.
So we did the Thrill Seeker Trail.
Oh, yes.
Which
very good.
Is described as difficult, but perfect for adrenaline junkies and fitness enthusiasts. This challenging trail joins some of the rock's most breathtaking experience. So obviously we knew that one was for us.
Oh, yes. So we ended up kind of doing that twice, I guess, because we had to come down and then walk the roadway. And then we found, was it St. Michael's Cave?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Which had
stalagmites
and
tights, kind of limestone things underneath.
Yeah, and they lit up the caves with beautiful, you know, purple lighting and, you know, all different colour lighting and things like that. And that was great. And that came within the... Because you paid for a ticket to get into the park, so that was within the ticket. And then we climbed to the highest point where there was a barracks, and I can't remember the name of it. And from that point, we took these steps.
There was a O'Hara's battery, and there was another one.
Oh, there we go. And we took these steps, and it was called the Mediterranean steps. That was it.
They were beautiful.
It was incredible. It was a long.
It was
route.
A difficult slog, though. Like it was.
Thank God we were going downhill by this point.
I wouldn't like to walk up them because they were broken steps, very steep and quite broken. Because they're obviously ancient steps. Have been there hundreds of years. But breathtaking views.
Really lovely, right on the edge of the cliff of the rock. Really, to be honest, and you know, it brought us all the way around the side of the island that had the lighthouse on. And also the side that you can see Morocco from.
And then you get to when you get down at the bottom, it's the Pillars of Hercules, because apparently in the Greek mythology, Gibraltar was one of the pillars that was holding up, you know. And then you can see Africa from there as well. You see Morocco across the street.
Yeah, we saw a lot of tourists there. I think they were getting dropped off at the Pillars of Hercules to have a look.
You can see. I never pronounced. Properly, but that Spanish territory is a Sitka or something. The Spanish territory, and then you can see Morocco as well. Obviously, it's all Africa, like.
And from there, we just took the road walk back. We were staying at the Elliot at the time, I think, and we took the road walk back
to the town. Then, like,
So we passed it. We went through the Botanic Gardens,
and they were very nice. We didn't go into them because we didn't. They were closed at that point. The ticket desk was closed, and then we walked down through the town, and they have some very as you're walking through the town, like they have. Really thick city walls, because there's a fortress. They have very old city gates. A lot of it, they haven't even made a tourist feature. You're just walking along.
Yeah.
It's just a normal street, and you're just thinking, oh, this is beautiful.
An example of that is the marinas as well. That was super nice. And there was, a place with gardens as well that was near one of the marinas, which I can't remember the name of, that was just, like, really beautiful. Mm. So yeah, just even walking around, that whole trip took us about, I think it was about 4 hours round trip.
I would say so, yeah. But it's really worth it. Like, it was really nice to get out.
A really good
And
ride.
Then if people had issues that they don't feel comfortable walking, or, you know, had health issues that prevented them from hiking, whatever, there is a cable car, so you could still get the views and the experience if you didn't want to walk, which is an option for people too.
Yeah. It was good, and the museum was good as well.
Interesting.
It's, you know, it's quite small. It was about the, was it Neanderthals, should I say? Is that
I think it kind of, yeah, Gibraltar. Like it kind of started with Neanderthals, but it was a bit unfortunate for Gibraltar because they had a very significant find of Neanderthal man and a Neanderthal woman, but they lost it somewhere. They had it in a museum, this skull.
Oh, yeah, that was
but
it.
They lost it, and they just sent it to London. So then it just got forgotten about. And then they realised in about like the 1900 or something, oh, if we had done this on time, we could have been known as like the cradle of civilization, but we didn't.
Yeah. Which sounds like classic British Overseas Territory, to be honest. Just there was a lot of stuff there from about World War II and about sieges and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did enjoy the museum, but I do think some of it, like, I will look things up online myself, of course, and do my own research. But even though I did enjoy it, I do think some of it wasn't that clearly explained. Like, I left thinking, oh, I'm still not really curious.
It was actually, the history was quite disjointed, really, because it started off, like, years and years ago with the Neanderthals. And then there was parts that were to do with the baths that were there.
Yeah, oh, the Moorish baths, when it was all part of, when Andalusia was under Moorish rule, Gibraltar was then part of Spain, and then it became part of the Moorish Empire, you know, when they had that. So they had the Hammam baths, which would be obviously very popular in the Moorish world.
And then it kind of skipped quite quickly over, okay, well, then Spain took it, and then
Britain somehow got it, and it wasn't really clear how that happened.
It didn't really mention that at all, and then all of a sudden it was a British Overseas Territory, and then it's World War
II. And then during the war, I couldn't understand, because during World War II, they were evacuating people from Gibraltar to London, but it seemed bizarre to me to be evacuated to London when London was simultaneously evacuating people from London. So I found they didn't really get into that either.
Yeah, that's true. Question unanswered, but yes, we could probably go.
But I do, that. I was, actually it just occurs to me now, I think the reason it was so disjointed is because they had to put in place a one-way system due to social distancing. So I'm sure in normal times you probably walk around the you don't have to do that artificial one-way system, and it probably makes a lot more sense.
That's true. One thing that was interesting going on whilst we were there as well was there was a lot of rallies to do with up-and-coming vote to do with abortion.
That's right.
So abortion, apparently, according to our research since we've been there, is currently not legal over in Gibraltar. And so the question is, should it be legalised? And a little bit of reading that I did, whether or not it's true, I don't know, it's not from a factual source, but was that some Gibraltarian ladies are heading over to Spain to take the tablets, and, you know, maybe they're not getting the aftercare that they need. You know, all sorts of kind of issue that's going on.
Well, it seems to be a very, it seems to be quite a controversial issue in Gibraltar, because when we were there, I saw on a few occasions, I saw people out with these sort of tables on the street giving out leaflets. And then I saw a march against abortion. Now, the people I saw were all anti-abortion, so I don't know whether, I don't know enough about Gibraltar to know whether they're just a very vocal group or whether they're actually a group that does represent a high proportion of people's opinion, because I wouldn't know enough about Gibraltar to know that.
And of course, you went to Mass, which was very good, and 75% of people in Gibraltar identify, who live there, identify as Catholic, which is interesting. So that could have a play on some of what people
could be. I mean, a lot of people in the anti-abortion march were young people, young women in particular, which I was surprising, like young women in their early 20s, which, you know, usually in Ireland, the profile of people who tend to, when we had our most recent abortion referendum, it tended to be that younger people, particularly younger women, took a different view, and it tended in Ireland to be older people who took that opposing view. But in Gibraltar, it seemed to be the people on that march leading it seemed to be very young people, so that was quite unusual to see. But again, I don't, you know, we don't know the nuances, and we'd have to really look into it. I don't really know.
Yeah, it was just an interesting bit of politics. And another thing that was going on there as well was it was the Queen's birthday, and so there was quite a lot of parades.
We're
a bit used to a parade in St. Helena, but it was different. Like, the band was a lot bigger than the ones we would have in St. Helena. They were very well organized. There's obviously a lot of military involved because of, you know, there being military bases in Gibraltar, and you know, the officials looked fabulous.
Oh, they're so glamorous, the women. Really glamorous, really bright colours.
The lady in the green dress. Incredible.
Green lady in a red dress, amazing. I suppose the only thing about it, though, is that it was a little bit... Like, if you were sort of a spectator, there was a bit more of a divide between the officials who were taking part and the crowd, whereas in St. Helena it would tend to be more inclusive, you know, whereas there was a bit of a divide that you kind of had to stand behind barriers, and all the officials were then collected, well, most of them, I mean, obviously we didn't stay all through, but most of them were being collected then in these, what seemed to be sort of government-driven, you know, vehicles with drivers, whereas... So maybe, you know, was a little bit more, people were kept at a bit of a distance.
Yeah. I suppose in St. Helena, when these things go ahead, it's expected that people spectating actually wear the garb as well.
Yeah.
Like,
Which here was very different, because the officials were dressed up, but then the spectators were just in their normal, it was just a little divide, I thought.
And also, I don't know if they had it in Gibraltar, but in St. Helena, the governor would naturally host a garden party as well.
I'd say they probably did have some sort of a reception after that event. You know, but it would, I imagine, I mean, considering that the people watching on the street were even had to stand behind the barriers, I'd imagine getting an invitation, that would be very difficult. I don't know if you would pay.
So it did all work out in the end for us. We had a nice 5-week holiday, and we come back. And I think, you know, we were just so exhausted when we left. And we look at photos back then and our eyes are... like dark circles and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I think for so many people who are dealing with going through lockdown and things like that, it's just very nice to have something to look forward to. I mean, massive suggestion, you know, if you can go to Gibraltar, brilliant, just do it. If you can find out somewhere else, that's a bit more challenging, and have time and money to throw it, being able to flex your plans and get back, then go for it.
Yes, I think at the moment, travel is definitely more difficult. So you would need to budget, you know, you would need to put aside extra, you couldn't really go on a shoestring budget because it would be too stressful. So you would need to save up and have a good sized budget so that you can take account of when things go wrong and changes need to be made. But I think if you can do that, and if you can also have the time to spend time, if you need, you know, to spend time.
If you can be vaccinated as well. I mean, I
wouldn't have gone if I wasn't vaccinated.
Yeah.
If I wasn't fully vaccinated, I wouldn't have gone. Because I think it would be dangerous for myself and for other people, so I wouldn't have done that. But then also, I think just if you, you know, it's more difficult to travel, but it's still very much worth it. And I think maybe you just have to look at the positive, that it's a little bit more like travel was years ago, when it wasn't easy. You didn't just show up in an anonymous airport, jump in a flight and everything, have everything laid on for you. You know, like when people kind of first start, I mean, like when I'm talking now in the kind of like the, you know, late 18, early 1900s, when people would take these exciting trips and it was a big thing, you'd be sending letters home and it would take weeks to traverse on ships and trains. And you know, I'm not saying practically we can't return to that, but it actually does, you know, even though you have to be flexible and you're paying more, etc., you have to look at the positive, that it makes it seem a bit more worthwhile because you've put the effort in. And I would say if anyone can travel, it can be done if you just research it.
Exactly. And you know, islands are great to go to, ones that have been vaccinated. You might have to do quarantine on entry. You tend to be safer once you're there. Like, even though Mali had high cases, Maldives was fine, Gibraltar was great as well. All countries who are very diligent with their protection, like Spain, for example.
Well, that's true. But you do have to check things. Like, I couldn't go home to Ireland because they're still on essential travel. So I wouldn't be able to go and visit my parents for holiday, which is what I was doing. So because, you know, I couldn't go there, and obviously, I was upset about that. So you do have to look at each country, because it can be so different. Like, if I had got into Ireland, once I'd have got there, I know from speaking to my family, the restrictions would still have been really, really high. So that wouldn't probably be suitable for holiday, because, you know, you can do anything. But hopefully that'll ease back. So I think you just need to be careful, though, because you don't want to inadvertently go to a country where they have loads of restrictions on their side. You can't actually enjoy the holiday.
Yeah, exactly. So just to finish up now, I wanted to mention that we have a different and special episode next week, which is with an author, Mark Westmaquette, who has written books around stars and also mindfulness, and a mishmash of both, really. So,
very, very interesting. I've always enjoyed Mark's. You know, I went to a stargazing voyage. It was amazing.
Yeah, so we'll be introducing that. So hope you listeners have enjoyed this, and we'll listen in next time.
See you then.
Welcome to An Irish Girl and an English Girl Walk Into a Pub. It's me, Nicole Shamir, and you?
Anya Hurley.
How are you today, Anya?
I'm fine, thank you. But it's usually walk into a bar, Nicole. You said walk into a pub.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, I mean, in COVID times, I suppose it's walk into the house and the kitchen, I guess. Maybe we should change our podcast.
Walk into misery.
Although we haven't had too much misery recently. We have been on holiday.
That's true. We've had a great holiday. And our quarantine was actually very pleasant, as we had such lovely sunny weather.
Exactly. A friend of mine at the moment is in quarantine in Japan, and she's got 14 days in a hotel room, and she can't go outside. So we've actually been really lucky. Mm. We've got 10 days in the house with a garden.
Yeah, no, it's been very bearable, actually quite pleasant.
Yeah, and this is the last day of it, which is exciting.
Yes, just a few hours left.
Yeah. So we won't be talking to each other much this podcast, will we?
No, because you have excitingly interviewed a special guest.
Yes. So what, Mark Westmaquette. Tell us about Mark.
Well, Mark wrote a very interesting book, which he speaks about in the interview. And I think you also give a little bit of an explanation about his book. So Mark was living in St. Helena with his wife, Jo, until relatively recently. Actually, very recently. They left on the flight that we left on to go on holiday, which is only like 6 weeks ago about. Mm. And most people in St. Helena will know that Mark's very interested in astronomy, and he's written books on the topic. But he also did evenings in Hainault Fort, where he... on clear nights would show people the stars and constellations and give like lots of information about them. And a few months before he left, he started doing cruises on Cheryl and Morgan's yacht, the Nomadica, where they were starlight cruises, where they would go out to James Bay, again on clear nights. And then Mark would tell people about all the constellations, which are, because there's no light pollution in St. Helena, it's extremely clear, so you have an amazing view of the stars. And we actually went on one of those cruises, and it was a really great experience. It was a perfectly clear night, the stars were beautiful, and then we had all that phosphorescence in the water. There were dolphins jumping, Morgan made hot chocolate, popcorn. It was just an amazing, amazing trip.
It was actually really cool. I think it was that night that we came up with the thought that perhaps, I invite Mark on and have a chat about his book. Like, I feel a bit bad, actually, because in the book chat, I go into a lot about psychology, but it's actually a lot about stars, which I don't touch on that much. But knowing who our podcast listeners are, we do like true life stories. That's true. Like experiences. We do like talking about, I don't know, travel and what people've learned and things like that. So I did go into it a lot. But yeah, a lot of his books, actually, when you read it, are very focused on the stars.
Mm. I look forward to hearing your interview with Mark.
Thank you very much.